Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-host, and with me today will be David Hulley and Steve Lydiard. In this episode, we'll be looking back at the very disappointing 2-1 loss for Fulham against Bristol City at Craven College on Saturday. We have much to get through, and before we do anything else, it looks like one of my co-hosts is on the line with me. I'm going to bring him on. Mr. Hulley, how you doing?
Yes, very disappointing indeed. That's probably the very polite way of putting it, I think, Russ, to be honest with you. It was a unmitigated disaster, really, the worst case scenario for us. And, you know, we managed to do it, and hence my severe reservations about the quality of our team and whether we will stay in this league, really.
Well, I'm going to ask you a point-blank question, David. Could we get relegated? Yes. I'm there with you. We are now in a relegation battle. But I'm going to put you under the cosh right now. Will we get relegated? Big difference. As of right now, do you think we will get relegated?
We can't afford to be relegated. We really can't. So
right, I agree.
Some way they have to pull out all the stops and stop this happening. I'm not really sure how, but you know, that would be in terms of, you know, the investment that Shahid Khan has put in. It would be a massive decline in the value of his investment. It would, you know, cast all sorts of doubts over, you know, what's happening. Slavisha, our best players, the Riverside Stand, because they would have to cut season ticket prices again just to try and maintain the status quo. They just can't afford for it to happen. So it has, you know, it has to be prevented somehow. I'm not sure how, because from what I saw yesterday, it's going to happen if they carry on like that.
Well, listen, David, like I said, they could get relegated. They are now smack dab in the middle of this. I did not want to be having this conversation, but you know what? We have to have the conversation. We're actually going to do a special show all about relegation Tuesday night, and I look forward to doing it because I want to have the conversation. I want to talk about it. I want to get into depth talking about Fulham and the other teams around them because it's a valid argument right now. We have to talk about relegation, but I posed the question to you because they are two different questions. Could we get relegated? The answer is yes. Will we get relegated? I don't think we will, and I'm not changing my mind on that. I don't think we will. I think they will find a way to stay up. I see the teams around us. There are teams that are ahead of us that are still not that far away from relegation, including Brentford, by the way. They're only 6 points off. So there are teams that are still dealing with what we're dealing. We are definitely under more pressure right now, and they need to figure this out, David. I agree with you 100%. What happened yesterday, what you watched, is disgusting. The best word to describe it, David, is disgusting.
Definitely. And you say that Brentford is six points ahead or something. You know,
yes.
At the moment, they might as well be a parsec away, you know? It's a parsec, a measure of time, isn't it? it is distant. I'm confusing myself from Star Wars. Yeah, Star Wars is the one that misquotes it. But, you know, it's 6 points is like light years away, isn't it? It really is at the moment.
Not necessarily, points, David, because we were just 10 points up, so that's not true.
Well, it's just the fact when you look at the games and you think Birmingham is, you know, next week and then there's an international break.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the right time for momentum, is it?
No.
If we don't get the result of Birmingham, the pressure really gets on you, doesn't it?
And of
Birmingham,
course it does.
Birmingham have done well.
They've done
very well. So, you know, we have, you know, a little spell here where there's slightly less matches for, you know, a couple of weeks. Maybe that time can be used positively. I would urge it to be used positively because this is our big chance now that we have to use that time and try and correct the problem that is, you know, unfathomable. Is it the coach? Is it the players? Different coaches, same lack of, you know, results, performances, fight even. So maybe it's the players. But we've had different players coming in, and yet the same cancer is almost there in the squad, unfortunately. I mean, it's like a cancer. It seems great players come in or positive players come in, and then they, you know, someone like Richard Stearman is probably a good person to quote on this one. He came in, you know, with a solid track record of playing at this level, didn't set the world alight, and is now sidelined. And, you know, I have to say, justifiably, really, because I don't think he did much for me. But why?
Right.
What's happening here? What makes a good or an average player become a bad player when they're at Fulham? And I don't know, but you've watched the result now. You've watched the replay. There was no fight, was there? Bristol wanted it more than we did, and that's the long and short of it.
Definitely in the second half, David. There's no question about it. You have to give them credit. They took all 3 points, and in the end, they deserve it because they wanted it more. And sometimes it comes down to that. Obviously, Fulham made some serious mistakes, but the second half was more about them. And like I just mentioned, with 9 matches left, they have to fight for survival. This is about the team, the head coach, his coaching staff, everyone fighting for survival because they are now in a serious relegation battle. And they could get relegated, like I said. I don't think they will. I think they will find a way out of it. But they are where they are, and we have to talk about it. But, David, before we go any further, it looks like Steve's on with us. Steve, how you doing, my friend? Good to have you back.
Yeah. I'm good, Russ. How are you?
I've been better, my friend. I've been better. And I'm sure you've been better after watching what you watched yesterday.
Oh, yeah. We headed back to the pub for a Swifty pint afterwards. It was definitely well-deserved.
Okay. Steve, we're starting the show just talking about the topic at hand. We're going to be doing a relegation show on Tuesday, but I just pose a question, David, because it's a valid question. Could Fulham get relegated? Yes, absolutely. Where they are right now, they could get relegated. But I ask the bigger question, because there are two different questions. In your gut, will they get relegated?
Is that for me or for David?
Oh, that's for you. That's for you. I already asked David.
For me, it's difficult. I want to say no, but I'm looking at the games. Can we pick up points? Yes. Where are we going to pick up the points given the current form? I don't see it. So if you were going to push me on a gut instinct, I'm probably going to say yes.
Yes, we'll get relegated.
Exactly. I just don't see where the points are coming.
Fair enough, Steve. No, listen, fair enough. And, David, you didn't really answer the question, so I'll go back to you. Do you think at this point right now, will Fulham get relegated?
I thought I'd got away with that one, actually.
No, you did it, David. You did it.
Well, what Steve said is right, is that, at this minute, all you can see is these performances. And so if nothing changes, yes, we would get relegated, obviously. Because, as I said to you half-jokingly on Friday, we may not pick up another point this season the way we're going at the moment. And I think that's unlikely, but even if we pick up 3 points or 6 points, it might be short of the target. So, as it stands at this minute, if nothing changes, if there's no improvement, yes, we will be relegated.
Okay. And listen, I know that form can go up and down. You can go up and down. And, David, you're going to kill me for this, but I am not going off of my prediction. Fulham are going to win 5 more matches before the end of the season. I'm not going against it. 5 out of 9. 5 out of 9. I am not backing off. Nothing what I watched yesterday or listened to or anything should back me on that. Call it my gut. My gut tells me that we are going to turn around. My gut tells me that there are going to be changes. My gut also tells me, David, and before we really get into this match, should Fulham make a change at the goalkeeper position? Because I think they should.
Well, it was almost going to be another, I'm afraid, David Hulley is right again moment, because all I see today on Twitter is all these hundreds of accounts that I follow, suddenly everyone's coming out and saying, oh, actually, Lonergan isn't a very good keeper. Maybe we need a better goalkeeper. He's okay on close-range shots, but he's crap on long-range shots, and he's crap on crosses. He doesn't command his area. He doesn't come off his line. What have I been saying for weeks, for months? Probably ever since
David Hulley, right
playing.
Again.
I mean, but it beggars belief because I saw these things all the time, and you know that. I've said it on the show. It's on the tape, so to speak. I told you straight away, I think the very first couple of times we saw him play, I had concerns about him. I said, he's okay as a number two, but as a number one, I'm not sure. And, you know, he has made some very good saves one-on-one. He seems to be good one-on-one with his legs and everything else. But everything else, I don't know. And yesterday, certainly there's question marks about the two goals, I think, in his positioning.
I think we should question both those goals. When we go through it, David, I want you to analyze both of those goals.
There is a however, of course, or a but. In the very first minute, you know, he saved a one-on-one with his legs. We could have been 1-0
yes.
down after a minute. So,
yes,
you've got
very
to take,
nice save.
You've got to take it up both ways. But I think there is clearly an issue with him on long-range shots. It's just been too many for it to be, you know, just a coincidence. And as you say, you've probably seen it today. There's been all people on Twitter saying he's not very good and blah, blah, blah. And I think Betts will be back in the team. And I think there's a big likelihood that Betts will be. He's on the bench. He's obviously fit enough to play. And it's going to be a bold move still, you know, because that if Slavisa makes that change, we don't know how if Betts is going to be any better. He's, you know, he's out of serious practice. But he's
sure.
basically pointing the finger at Lonergan and saying, you haven't been good enough. I'm changing you. So that's, we're going to see, you know, who's got the balls, basically, in the next week or two, I think.
I totally agree, David. And my biggest takeaways in, while we go through this match, one, obviously, like you guys were talking about, the second half, you know, you've already said this, David, second half, they wanted it more, and they took it from us. But the other takeaway is talking about Lonergan and watching back, and I just thought to myself, could he have done better? That's why I was looking forward to asking you about these two goals and thinking that I think it's time for a change of goalkeeper. Steve, I want to go to you because I want to get your thoughts. You were there, and I don't know how good of a look you got on both of these goals, but I'm just asking the question, posing the question. Do you think that Lonergan could have done better, and could you see a change in goalkeeper coming?
To say he could have done better is probably a little bit harsh. Can I see a change in keeper going? Yes, definitely, because I think, as we've all been pointing out, and I think possibly it was David that initially said, he does seem a bit suspect from long-range shooting. And it just seems to be that almost the two shots that have beaten him yesterday are almost, you know, sort of outside the penalty area, or they are outside the penalty area, and they're shots that, you know, maybe someone like Betts might be tipping around the post or getting a fingertip to it, and it just doesn't seem he's getting anywhere near them. So while he's good at one, like we're saying, he's good at one-on-one stops, he just seems to let a lot of long-range stuff in. And it's very frustrating, to be honest.
It is very frustrating, Steve, very frustrating. And, you know, I look back at this match and I just think about, you know, the opportunities in the first half. You know, I'm just talking about the dominance and then, of course, really not getting that second goal really, really came back to bite them, especially in the second half. But I felt very nervous at halftime, thinking that it's only 1-0 and they should be up by more, and thought that somewhere during the first half they were starting to come into the game, and they really came into the game in the second half. And like I've been saying, like David was saying, they took the game. They deserve all 3 points. There's no question about it. They deserve it. But, Steve, I want to get just your overall view of what you watched yesterday.
I actually thought there was a warning sign. Obviously, we've covered before we scored, there was the one-on-one save. And I actually thought we started a little bit slow then, and that was the first warning sign. But then we kind of hit back straight away, you know, with the goal. And I kind of thought, oh, it's going to be another sort of one of those trips, like the trip to Bristol itself. And I thought this could be like that. And I felt that all through the first half. If we get a second, it could be 3-4, you know, probably not any more than that. We were never going to keep a clean sheet. We know that. But yeah, I thought it could be that. And then just to get in at half-time at 1-0, they just seemed to settle for that. And I don't know why we seem to settle for it all the time. But as soon as if we do get a goal in front, we settle on it. If we get a goal behind, we're chasing the game all the time. And, you know, both ways don't really work.
No, I hear you, Steve. I hear you. All right. David, over to you. Let's just talk quickly about the starting 11. I talked to you briefly before the match, so you were happy. I was happy. So let's talk about the starting 11.
Well, you know, the team at the moment almost picks itself, it seems. We've kind of stumbled, you know, one way or another onto a sort of a relatively settled sort of formation and lineup. And because of the fact that we're limited in some positions, you know, some say some of the team picks themselves almost, really. If we're playing the 3-5-2, you know, it's going to be Garbutt and Fredericks, really. There's no real other alternatives. The back three, you know, has been settled, if nothing else. And obviously, Maddle was brought in. Amabieta was brought back and put straight in. And Byrne has been pretty much a constant in Slavisa's team. So, again, really, we see them there. It was the only real question yesterday was which two would start in central midfield. And I was pretty sure Parker would, because I thought we'd need his inspiration. And I actually did think he'd go with Tunnicliffe to provide the energy and everything, although it's a toss-up between him, O'Hara, etc. And, of course, Kearney in the hole behind the two strikers. So I was totally happy with, you know, the formation and everything. And, you know, remember, this formation worked very well when we played them early in the season, albeit under different managers, and they played a different formation.
Okay.
So I had no problems with that. I had no problems with that at all. I thought this is the right sort of balance, really, to be strong in the middle, to provide width, and with two up front, and you know, with Kearney behind to hurt them. And so, you know, I thought this was about the best we could do.
Okay, and I totally agree, David. I was very happy with the starting 11. Steve, how about you?
Yeah, I was quite happy with the starting 11 as well. I'm probably going to sidetrack slightly, but I was a bit concerned during the game with obviously the two strikers. We've seen a lot of McCormack and Dembele playing close together, and it just seemed yesterday they were playing miles apart. And so in hindsight, if you'd have known that was going to happen, you might have changed your starting 11 with your strikers. But again, you know, they are our best two strikers, and that's why we've gone with it.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, let's now get into this match. Let's talk about the first half. And David, before I go to you, I just share some basic information with you on the first half, and I want your analysis. Bristol City had that great opportunity very early on, and like you mentioned, Andy Lonergan made a nice save to keep the score even at that point, obviously, very early on, first minute. But Fulham get the first goal of the match, and the third minute, great shot by Ross McCormack to give Fulham the lead. Fulham were in control for large parts of the first half, but like I mentioned, Bristol City were coming in the second half of the first half, really getting into the match. There was also an opportunity on a free kick by Ross McCormack that just went wide, but the half ended 1-0. So, David, I just want to get your overall analysis of the first half.
Well, obviously, after that initial scare, of course, we went ahead with an excellent sublime finish there by Ross. You know, it was a good long ball from Madeline for once. McCormack wasn't offside, and he's got to the right-hand side of the penalty area. Just a quick look up and delicate chip into the top corner, top corner. Of course, there was this initial hush as the ball went over, and then this cheer, of course, when everyone realised he'd scored. And it was a perfect start for us, really. And, you know, we did look in the ascendancy for the first half. You know, we were doing pretty well. You know, and to the point that, obviously, their kind of star striker, Kodja, was taken off at half time because I think Amabieta had him in his pocket most of the time, for what I saw. It wasn't a perfect performance by Fulham, however. I mean, there were some sort of crap long balls played and everything. And one thing I did notice, we call it the 3-5-2, but it was actually more like a 5-3-2 at times, because Fredericks was very much hanging back. And Garbutt quite a bit as well. They weren't playing as far forward, it seemed, as they have done and have been doing. But the trouble that we found is, unfortunately, it was the same old for Fulham. We were faffing around. I was there. My half sister came with us to watch yesterday, and she'd never been to the cottage before. And she said, you know, exactly that. We faff around. We get towards the edge of the penalty area, and then we turn around and we go sideways. We go backwards, and we end up sometimes going all the way back to Lonergan. And then rather than playing the ball on the ground with possession, we then launch it forward and end up losing it. And, you know, Kearney, unfortunately, can be a bit like this. McCormack can be a bit like this. You know, Garbutt does. There's not very many of them, if anyone, who takes people on. Kearney does try a little bit, but he gets to a point and then turns around. And he's so left-footed that he's restricted to go one way. Of course, yeah, as I say, that Fredericks wasn't getting as far forward as normal, so we didn't have that kind of overlap so much on the right-hand side. So we really, you know, we get into these positions, but not doing anything with us, with it. It was just, the movement was poor at times. You see players standing around, not really making runs. Probably the one who made the most runs, if anything, was probably Tunnicliffe. They're a little bit sort of, you know, blind runs, just, you know, hopeful runs, but he was at least charging around like a madman a bit in the first half, you know, trying to close balls down and trying to get into positions. But there was a distinct lack of quality in our sort of ball playing. We didn't really have anyone, you know, to unlock the Bristol City defence, and we weren't that keen on taking shots particularly. So although, you know, we were fairly in control the first half, you know, to go in only 1-0 ahead, of course, the, you know, the warning bells were ringing.
Yeah, I totally agree, David. Before I go to Steve, I want to ask you a question, because this is what I was thinking during the match. Do you think Fulham played scared?
I don't know if scared is the right word, but it's certainly
hesitant?
Unadventurous. You know,
unadventurous,
they just,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it can amount to the same thing in a way. But they just weren't prepared to take the risk, to take the man
okay.
on, to try, you know, and also...
They weren't aggressive enough.
No, and on the few times that Luke Garbutt got, you know, into crossing positions, quality of his crossing wasn't good enough, in my opinion. He was getting cut out by the first man or by the man at the near post. You know, we saw on Tuesday against Burnley that exquisite cross from which Dembele scored, the perfect cross which takes everybody out, takes the defenders and the keepers out. But we didn't see one of those at all yesterday, so... the quality wasn't good enough, but yes, it was. It was. They were very cautious, too cautious. We're at home,
right.
You know, playing, you know, a team that are down where we are, and you know, equally as poor perhaps. And we weren't, you know, we weren't prepared to be adventurous there. And you know, we end up losing the ball, or we lose the territorial advantage anyway. So we might as well gone for it. I think we might as well try to be more adventurous. You know, it was
right.
It was very, very, very frustrating to see us just, you know, back to where we were. Stagnating in the final third of the pitch, not prepared to make, you know, runs and through balls and shots and everything else. And, you know, again, like we did against Reading, when our Habsi was a little bit on the, you know, suspect side on long shots, we saw that again with, I think it's O'Donnell in the goal. A couple
yep.
of longer range shots, you know, he was fumbling a bit. We should have been really, you know, following up on that, really putting him under pressure, and we weren't. So, you know, certainly it was a combination of either, you know, being overly careful, not being adventurous, being scared even, I don't know, but it just didn't work anyway.
Yeah, my point was, David, and before I go to Stephen, I'm going to go to Stephen 1 second, was I guess the best way to put it, do you think they were afraid to make a mistake and that was why they weren't adventurous enough?
I don't know. It's how do you get into the mindset of these guys and what they were doing? I think it is probably endemic. There's a lack of confidence maybe throughout
okay.
the squad.
Right.
McCormack, I would probably exclude mostly from that. You know, he had the confidence to try the chip. And he does try and do things with the ball. But the rest of them, you know, I don't think they do have the confidence to maybe, you know, to take people on. Or, you know, as we know, there's also, you know, we have a distinct lack of pace. There's not very many people with pace in our squad. Well, Fredericks is the only one with real, genuine pace. And if he's not taking people on, you know, then we're in trouble because we just don't have that. And I think it's a reflection of their own abilities that perhaps they don't feel that they're going to beat their man, so they don't even try and take them on. And so we get stuck in that position where it's an impossible scenario where, you know, we can't take the people on. Bristol City have two banks of four behind the ball. And we end up playing the ball backwards and sideways and losing the territorial advantage.
Okay, very good there, David. That's why I just wanted to ask you, because I guess it's a complex discussion topic, because it's, you know, it's a little bit of both is what you're trying to get to with me. All right, Steve, your thoughts on the first half and also this discussion we're having about being hesitant, not being aggressive enough. I want to get your take on that as well.
I'll start with the first. My initial observation was I thought Davies pretty much said it. He said around we were hesitant, and I kind of got the idea. A lot of the time, Bristol seem to either get 10 and sometimes 11 men behind the ball, because lately, obviously, you know, we've been quite toothless. We struggle to find ways through teams sometimes. And it was almost like at times they came for a point. I know they did concede early, but even then they kept a good structure, and they kind of felt they would get chances at some stage of the game. So they would let us have the ball, you know, get the positional sense around them and just sort of defend. If they can get a quick break, they'd do that. Or once they won the ball, they would break out and try their thing. But we just didn't seem to have the answers again.
Okay, very good, Steve. All right, let's transition to the second half. And this was a match that definitely was a tale of two halves. And Fulham were definitely second best in the second half. They had a very good opportunity to score from Moussa Dembele, who had just a great opportunity, but was denied by the Bristol City goalkeeper, O'Donnell. And then, of course, in the 69th minute, you have Marlon Pack scoring to make the match 1-1. And with 3 minutes left, Fulham had those great opportunities late in the match, you know, the scramble in front of the net, but they could not capitalize. And then, like it always seems to happen with Fulham, right after that, you have the set piece from Lee Tom when he scores to give Bristol City the victory, to 2-1 victory. So share with me your second half observations. Steve.
Yeah, again, completely different to the first half. Sorry, something I didn't touch on the first half, just towards the end. I think there was a moment I was saying to Emilio and Davey yesterday that Ross McCormack dropped into a left-back role to pick up the ball. And I thought, you know, Luke Garber's playing almost like a left winger, Ross McCormack a left back, and thinking, what is he doing back there? But surely Jokanović cannot be telling him to drop back to left back at any point in time. So that has to be something that he's taken upon himself. And again, moving into the second half, it just seemed particularly, I was looking at Moussa Dembele before he was dragged off, and I touched on it earlier, where he was just going wide all the time, and you'd find Ross McCormack was hugging the right touchline almost. You know, Moussa Dembele was hugging the left touchline, and it was just so easy for the two centre-backs to just mop everything up going through the middle. And again, Scott Parker at times in the second half looked like, you know, moving further back from the strikers, he looked like he was just sort of all on his own in the middle. I thought we were playing three in the middle of the park, not one.
Okay, very good, Stephen. There's one other topic I wanted to go over with you before I go over to David. As a ref, and you are a referee, there was a situation in the second half with Ross McCormack going down in the box. And I'm not saying that this is why Fulham lost the match. I'm just asking the question, as a ref, was that the right call, the right non-call?
Honestly, I can't remember the incident, and that would suggest to myself and there was nothing to go with it. I actually thought the referee had a decent game yesterday. I know I've seen a few people say, oh, he was this and that, and he did seem to at times feel the pressure towards the end, but I thought, on the whole, he had a decent game. I can't really fault him at all. So if there was a penalty in there, then I've completely missed it, because I'd have been up all in arms if I thought there was.
Okay, fair enough, Steve. David, over to you, your second half observations, and also this situation with McCormack. I don't know if you got a good view of it, but I'm curious your thoughts on that as well.
Clearly, you didn't see my tweet again, Russ. You really need to follow me more closely, because I said, has Ross been taking lessons from Barton and Boyd as he acquaints himself with the turf or something, you know? Because twice he went down in the space of a few minutes, just threw himself to the floor, and it was, you know, if Mike Gregg was on, he'd be pulling his hair out, because I know how much it frustrates him as well. And it frustrates me too.
Yeah.
And there was absolutely nothing in it. Even Simon Patey, who was sitting behind me, agreed it wasn't a penalty. And if he says that, then you know it's not. Because he's murder. I had him shouting in my ear, offside. That's not offside. Or when there was a few offside decisions. I mean, he needs to get his glasses sorted out. But I thought the ref and official did well. I did quote from the start that I thought the ref looked a bit on the large side around the middle. He looked like he'd not as trim as some of us are, Russ, and he looked incredibly old, incredibly old, really ancient, until someone tweeted me and said, actually, he's 50, the same as you. So I thought, oh, shit. Maybe that's how I look, like an old fat man to everybody else. But
David, before we move on, I just want to say that I agree with Steve and you. I just wanted to ask Steve that topic, because I thought he went down very easily too. But as a ref, he has to deal with situations like this. That's why I was curious his thoughts and didn't want to follow up with you. I do agree with both of you, though.
No, it was there was nothing in it that I saw. I thought the officials had a good game, really. I can't think of any particular incident where some terrible wrong was done. But in terms of the second half, it was very, very frustrating. We just really didn't ever get going. We were second best. You know, the goal from Bristol City was inevitable, the first one, and that was after a mistake by Garbutt. We were kind of trying to break out a little bit quickly from our penalty, if I remember, and there was a ball came out quite sharply to Ross, and he headed it down and back kind of to Garbutt, who took the wrong touch and basically gave it to their guy. And because we were kind of been running out to try and make a break, the middle was really quite empty. There was no one there. The guys had a clear run, you know, and the shot. And it looked a little bit as if Lonergan had dived over it. And this is why, obviously, we've been talking about that at the start of the show. And, you know, and there was a token effort from Fulham to try and, you know, get things back on track. As you say, we had that near the end, that sort of blocks on the line. But you could also question the substitutes, because ultimately we ended up playing, I don't know if you noticed, with Byrne and Amabieta up front. And I think Maddell was there as well, actually. And
yeah.
Jamie O'Hara's sitting back sweeper. So, you know, does it not beg the question, perhaps we should have just taken one of the defenders off and put someone like Matt Smith on if we're chasing the game? I mean, bringing on Corley, it's nice to see Corley back, but I'm not really sure what benefit there was from that, especially for Musa, who had, I think he'd been having a reasonable game. The main problem for Musa was that he missed that glaring opportunity when he was put through by a great ball, I think, by Fredericks, and his touch was too heavy and he's, you know, messed it up. But I thought Musa actually put a lot of work in and ran the channels well, and he was trying to take people on, and he's, again, and one of the only one who is prepared to take people on and dribble and everything. But obviously, you know, he had that that bad miss. And then, of course, and I don't agree with the decision to substitute him, but when they did, of course, he took ages to go off, and that met with displeasure from the crowd, who really were, you know, peeved by that his lack of attitude or whatever. I think he was disappointed to be taken off by his body language, that he probably felt
right.
It was a bad move by Slavisa. And as I say, I don't see any benefit in bringing on Woodrow for him. Woodrow is, you know, just back from an injury, short of practice. I think if they were going to go mad to get the win, they might as well have brought on Matt Smith before Woodrow, really. At least, you know, change it up. But instead, they put central defenders forward. And, you know, I don't really see the logic in that at the end, because they might as well have someone there who is a, you know, a bona fide, straightforward, you know, striker rather than a defender up there. But so you could question the substitutions a little bit as well. Obviously, but when you list the problem we have with Fulham is that we don't have a lot of strength in depth in certain positions. Obviously, there was a lot of criticism for Garbutt being taken off for Ream, and they're saying, you know, this is a match we want to win. Why have they taken brought Ream on? But I think there was an injury to Garbutt, because if you notice, just after he gave away the ball that led to the first goal, he came on a mad charge forward and tried to single-handedly make up for his mistake, and you could see that. And he ended up getting hurt, and he was limping back, and I think he was injured. And I don't think he would have brought Ream on for any other reason. Okay, he could be sort of chastising him for making the mistake, but I think it was an injury, because Ream is going to offer nothing there as a wing back. You know, he doesn't go forward at all anyway, as we know. And you know, in that situation, they probably might as well have changed to a 4-4-2, really, or done something slightly different, because that didn't really help. As I say, Fredericks and Garbutt are almost irreplaceable, unfortunately. And that's a terrible situation to be in when we've got, you know, we're so reliant on two people to have good games and to be fit. And the same with other people, you know. There's a few others like that. Again, strikers-wise, really, we don't have a lot of options. So second half, it just, for several reasons, the wheels fell off. You know, Musa missing a good chance, the block shots on the line, you know, being second best, substitutions, which probably didn't really help at all. And, of course, it was the real what happened towards the end. I think Amabieta was done by someone. He committed himself, Byrne then fell over and slipped, and it was left with Maddle to take one for the team and take the striker out on the edge of the area and give away the free kick and a yellow card. And, of course, they score from that. You know, Lee Tomlin, a journeyman who's been around a few years and everything, you know, made it look like a piece of cake, putting in the goal. And, as I say, questions again about Lonergan's positioning.
Didn't I was going to ask you, David.
It, but,
yeah. Should he have done better, David?
It's really hard to say for sure because it depends on the wall, how well he was sighted, the trajectory. But you've got to try and cover all options in these things. And you know, the wall is meant to protect part of the goal, and the goalkeeper is meant to protect the other part of the goal, standing slightly off from centre. But if you get the perfect free kick in, you know, that gets over the wall into the top corner, it's pretty impossible for the keeper. But this wasn't over the wall into the top corner. So this is when, you know, you start asking questions perhaps. And my gut feeling is, yes, he could have done better. But, you know, I don't know if we're being unkind to Lonergan. Certainly Lonergan wasn't to blame, you know, for our performance overall.
Oh, no way.
He could have done better with one or two of the goals. We may have done better out of it than you think, but it wasn't him who was, you know, the lack of commitment, the lack of effort. And, you know, Mike summed it up in his tweets. You know, he's been very protective about the team and everything, and he said, we bottled it, basically. And that's, you know, exactly how I would describe it.
Okay. Okay, very good, David. Listen, I'm going to read this quote to you, and I want your thoughts on it, and Steve as well, before I go back to you, Steve.
Yep.
It's from Ross McCormack. It's on the Fulham website. It's Ross, it's in our hands because it talks about the second half. And want to get a feeling from you if you think he's summing up what you guys saw, okay? I could see it coming, a deeply frustrated McCormack told the official website. We sat far too deep in the second half and let them into it when we should have carried on doing what we were doing in the first half when they didn't have a sniff. Second half, its usual form, we were in control and threw it away. David, what are your thoughts about what McCormack shared after the match?
Well, there's nothing to add to that, really, is there, I think? I think it's a very, very fair appraisal, isn't it? You know, we were sitting too deep. As I said, I noticed that the wing-backs were sitting deep the whole game. And, you know, that might be credit to Bristol City, of course. They may have done their homework and realised that, in fact, if they could get their, you know, midfielders advanced, they could try and hold the wing-backs back. And so, you know, maybe Slavica was out-coached on that respect. I don't know. But it seemed that Johnson, and I'm sure it gave Johnson no pleasure, overall, because his family, they're Fulham fans, if you know. You know, his dad, Gary Johnson, and him both, you know, grew up being Fulham fans. So I'm sure they don't really get any pleasure out of making Fulham suffer. They'd rather it be against someone else. But,
sure,
you know, maybe their knowledge of Fulham or their love for Fulham actually worked against us, and that they were able to come up with, you know, a plan and how to, you know, how to neutralise us. And certainly if you can stop the wing-backs getting forward in a 3-5-2 kind of scenario, then, you know, you really are, you know, you are restricted, and all you can do is go through the middle in that case. And if they can be strong through the middle, which they were, and we won. You know, Parker was the only one in central midfield at times, because Tunnicliffe was on his own kind of mission here, there, and everywhere, and so was Kearney. And in fact, it was almost like we played with Kearney and Tunnicliffe in cam roles at times, or even Tunnicliffe. There was one point in the first half, I remember Tunnicliffe was actually sort of cam, and Kearney was playing alongside Parker, and it was, you know, it was a bit strange. So I think that, you know, what McCormack said is true, but, you know, maybe we're out-coached as well.
That's very interesting. Steve, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on what McCormack shared after the match about the second half, and also what David just shared. Do you think that possibly Slavica Jokanović was out-coached?
I don't necessarily think he was out-coached. I think maybe a bit tactically, potentially naive at times. I'm not sure whether we had an idea to press. That this was something I noticed. I hope I don't go off on a tangent on this one, but I did notice that there were times that there was one or two players pressing the ball, but the rest of the team would sit off. Now, as anyone, you know, we all know, if you've got three players against one, if one player, say McCormack, is pressing the ball, but no one else is as a team, then it's just, they're just going to be playing pig in the middle with him. And at times it felt like that. We either press, all press as one team, or we don't press at all. And we were just caught in the middle far too often. For McCormack, I think McCormack was spot on to say that it was coming was, yeah, was an understatement. You know, had we attacked them and been a bit more ruthless, you know, then I think we'd have, okay, we might have given up one goal potentially, but I think we'd have potentially scored two, three, or four. But like we've all been pointing towards, we just sort of let them back into it, and that was it.
Yeah, and Steve, this goes back to this whole conversation we had at the beginning of the show when we were talking about Fulham being hesitant. For whatever reason, they were being hesitant in this match. You could say lack of confidence, like David was mentioned, and I think maybe a potential lack of confidence. But for some reason in the second half, like McCormack said, they sat too deep and they weren't ruthless enough. And they let this team back into the match and basically take over the match. And again, it's two mistakes. Garbage mistake leads to the first goal. And then a set piece leads to the second goal. You know, I mean, we get undone so often. I've never seen a team get undone so often by their own errors, their own mistakes. But I think this match, Steve, goes deeper than that. I think this is a team. This is just my opinion that played too hesitant and lacks confidence. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, funny enough, I was chatting on the way back yesterday from after the game from the pub, and I was kind of saying, walking through Putney, I sort of said, is it not something you can... Sorry, I just lost my train of thought there. Sorry, can you go to David for a minute while I get that train back?
Sure, not a problem, not a problem, Steve. Well, you go do what you got to do.
Oh,
I'm going to go
Russ,
to David.
Russ, I found it. It's okay. Yeah, I was just suggesting that the fact that we keep conceding goals anyway, even though we're trying to defend, why don't we just go with the whole Blackpool and Bournemouth sort of approach? We'll score more than you do, because if we're conceding two, three goals anyway, we might as well concede two or three, but then go and score four or five ourselves. So there's no point defending if we can't defend.
That's an interesting take. I don't know if I want them to go to the Blackpool approach, you know, but, you know, Eddie Howe did a wonderful job with Bournemouth. It's really, really good to see what's going on there. But I
yeah,
hear what
still
you're
is.
Saying. He's doing an excellent job, but it's an interesting take because Fulham cannot defend. And I think, you know, I think they can defend, but they just make terrible errors. And it seems like they get punished for every mistake they make, Steve. That's the way I look at it. Whenever they make a mistake, they get punished.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right, guys. Let's move on. Let's talk about the full-time stats. I'll go through it real quick and just get your thoughts to see if anything sticks out to you. David, I'll go to you first. Possession, 49% to 51%. Fulham had 49%, just to mention. Total shots, Fulham had 16 to 10 for Bristol City. On target, Fulham had 6 to 5. Corners were with Bristol City, 5 to 3. Crosses were... to Bristol City, 21-19. Tackles were in favor of Fulham, 20-14. Attempted passes were in favor of Bristol City, 384-378. Attacking passes were in favor of Bristol City, 170-163. Passing accuracy was in favor of Fulham slightly, 75-74%. Aerial duels, much in favor of Bristol City, 31-14. And fouls were even at 12. All right, David, what stands out to you from the full-time stats?
Well, you know, we're normally, you know, the better passing team, or supposedly the better passing team. And I wonder if that's down to when, you know, O'Hara's playing, because O'Hara is always running around playing these little triangles with everyone, these little short passes. And I wonder if, you know, although he's quite good at it, whether this artificially ups our kind of passing effectiveness rates. Because he wasn't playing yesterday, and, you know, Tunnicliffe isn't really that kind of player. Rather than the ball doing the work in triangles, Tunnicliffe likes charging around with the ball, holding on to it longer.
That's a good point.
So that's one thing that I noticed. Obviously, you know, on crosses we were slightly undone. So, you know, that kind of suggests that, you know, the wing backs weren't effective for one reason or another, as well. Obviously, most of the stats were fairly close. I mean, it's you're looking at it, you'd think, well, probably a draw is, you know, from these figures. But, you know, possession-wise, you know, we weren't there, were we? You know, you'd expect at home against a team that are going to probably put two banks of four behind the ball, you'd expect us to have lots of possession, faffing around with it, as I said, you know, earlier on. But it wasn't. It wasn't as high at all. So it suggests we didn't keep the ball long enough. We didn't use the ball well enough. We got rid of the ball too early. Gave away possession too often, and that's probably exactly what did happen. So it's kind of, there's nothing that really stands out as a kind of a massive, either, you know, a massive indication of where the result went one way or an anomaly. Sometimes we get these big anomalies, you know, where you get a massive possession one way and the other team won, or whatever. There's no real anomalies in there. It's a close match. It was closely fought, but, you know, what we saw wasn't quite what that. I think this suggests that, you know, we won slightly more tackles, but, you know, I'd put it to you that Bristol City were the team who were up for it more, and you've watched the replay, and so the fact that we won slightly more tackles doesn't really have a bearing on how it actually played out and what the result was.
Okay, very good there, David. Steve, over to you. What stands out to you from the stats?
My gut from it stands out is that we were out fought, particularly when you look at aerial duels. I mean, I could be completely wrong, but I'm going to guess we've got bigger players than they have in a few positions, and to lose that many aerial duels is a bit of a worry. And we tended to play, obviously bringing into that, we tended to play the long ball a fair bit yesterday. But with the likes of Moussa and Ross on, what's the point of using a long ball tactic? We might as well bring in Matt Smith. So again, that's my first and only really thought to add to David, is that I thought we were just out four, and the aerial duels shows that.
No, very good, and I'm glad that David brought up, on top of that, going back to the crosses, because maybe that's a good indication of the play of the wingbacks not being able to be as effective as they have been in the past. It's David Holly Wright again.
this is opinions, you know. I'm just trying to give reasons about what went wrong. There's not
a right and
wrong, you know. We had this discussion in the pub yesterday with us, and it's all about opinions, you know. And listen,
of course,
I was right. I was right with the lineup. I got the lineup and the formation completely right, and I said this was a team that you know that the best team that
Gee,
we could
Steve,
pick
David
to go out there,
right,
and we
again.
Lost. So yeah,
I was trying to enjoy my chips at the time when David was looking through the team lineup.
But, you know, I've picked the lineup. I've said this is the best lineup, in my opinion, to go and win this match. And we haven't won the match. So, you know, either I'm a complete idiot or, you know, we just don't have the right players or the right tactics. I don't know.
I'm not going to touch that, David. I'm not going to touch that one. All right, let's move on. We only have about 12 minutes left, so we have to do this fairly quickly, my friend. Let's rate the players. I'll go to you. If you can, do it in a few minutes.
Me or Steve?
You first, David, because you tend to take a little bit, so that's why I want to go to you first.
Well, Lonergan, I'm going to give him 5.5. There were a couple of saves that were great, but obviously there was question marks on the goal, and there was obvious lack of command of his area against a 5.5 for me. Maddle did okay. Much better than he did last week against Burnley, of course. But I don't think he was outstanding. It was good pass for Ross McCormack's goal. So I'll give him 6.5 for that, basically a half of that pass. Burn, I don't know. Again, it wasn't awful, but frustrating that a lot of his headers don't seem to go to the right person. They just go straight back to the opposition. Slipped at a crucial time as well, which led to second goals. I'm giving him 5.5. Amabieta, I thought he dealt with Codger really well in the first half.
Yeah.
Codger was withdrawn. Second half, not so much so. But, he was strong. Right there, as I say again, he committed himself, which led to their goal. I'm going to give him 6, though. As for the wing backs, Fredericks, I'm going to give him 5. He was okay, but for me he was too deep, and he really didn't, you know, we saw, I think, once him getting forward, and that's, you know, whether it's down to tactics, the opposition or whatever, he's got to be getting forward much more than that. So he wasn't, you know, to be a wing back, you've got to get forward as well as defend, and he wasn't doing that. So five. Garbutt, I think likewise, really, got forward more, but wasn't enough quality in his crossing. Mistake for the first goal, five as well for me on that one. Central midfielders, Parker showed most of his qualities that he normally does, but still for me, he was not as effective as he can be at times. I'm not sure if that's because he played twice in the week. I'd give him seven nevertheless, because he was fighting there for it. Tunnicliffe fighting as well, but I think he overcooked himself a little bit, tired himself out perhaps. Lots of energy, maybe not enough quality, 6.5 though for effort. Kearney, frustrating as always. You know, lovely touches, some great little moves, but without the end product really yesterday. So nothing more than really a 6, I think, for him. Strikers, McCormack didn't do a lot for me. Frustrated, you know, lying down on the ground when he should be, you know, fighting for the cause. Not really, not much to say. But obviously, a delightful goal from him. I'm going to give him 6.5, I think, just for that. Musa is kind of almost the other way around. Did a lot of effort, much more running, but missed you know, the best chance of the game for him to score, really.
Yeah.
And then his petulant kind of, you know, going off when, you know, being substituted. So I'm giving 5.5 for that as well. Subs I'm not going to rate because they weren't really on for that long.
I was going to say, don't even bother with the subs. Steve, over to you.
Right, so I'm going to give Lonergan a 6.5, only because I'm going to go somewhere in between 6 and 7, because I'm not so sure he was necessarily at fault for the goals. But
okay.
So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to give him a 6.5, but I can't really give him any higher than that. Maddle, I'm going to give a 5.54. David's covered quite a lot of it, to be honest. He wasn't exceptional. He wasn't absolutely terrible, but he could have done better. Dan Byrne, standard 6. He won a few aerial duels. He didn't stand out from the crowd, but he didn't stand out for terrible reasons either. Amor Bieta, I'm going to give a 5. I'm going to go 5.5 for him. I thought he was pretty solid yesterday. The only thing I didn't like about him, he was tended to sort of do a Ruiz. He tended to slow the play down. When we were trying to switch it from one side to the other, he'd open out his body to shift it to the left, and then he'd cut back in and just say, no, you know, I'll have it back on my right foot again. And it just kind of just stopped the play. And where Bristol was stretched at times, they then sort of relaxed and got back into position. I was just like, the opening's gone then. This is that Fredericks is the one I completely disagree with David on. I actually thought he was our best player. I can't give him much more than what I'm going to give him because we were how we were. I'm going to give him a 7. He had a goal-saving tackle, I seem to remember, in the second half, that had he not done that, otherwise, as it speaks to itself, as a goal-saving tackle, that would have been a goal for them. And he was up and down, like a yo-yo all game. Even when he was so tired towards the end, he was bombing it back, and he was beating people that had been on the pitch 5 minutes, you know, for maybe sort of 5 minutes. People like O'Hara, you know, and he was outpacing them. You could see he was physically shattered, but he still kept going. And I don't really think he could break forward with the service he was getting and the opportunities he had. Scott Parker, I'm going to give him a 6. Fairly solid. Seemed to be on his own at times. Tunnicliffe, I'm going to give a 5.5. I actually thought he had quite a decent first half. Second half, he seemed to go missing. And I can actually remember that he was on the pitch until one moment towards the end. And I suddenly realised he was there. So it was quite interesting. Kearney, I'm going to give a 6 as well. Again, first half, he looked to get on the ball so much. Second half, he was still trying to do the same. But again, the service into him wasn't really happening. He didn't have any outball, any options available. Luke Garbutt, again, I'd have given him a 7, but for his crossing, I think we've already touched on that with us guys, that his crossing wasn't brilliant. It could have been worse. It could have been a lot better. A lot of them tended to be grounded passes that would be cleared at the near post. But decent size from him. McCormack and Ndombele, I'm both going to give them 5.5. I thought Dembele again had a good first half, as did McCormack. But they were playing too far away from each other, and one of them should have taken the ball by the horns and said, we need to be closer together. And you'd expect that potentially from your vice-captain as a more experienced player. So I'm going to give them both 5.5.
Okay, great. Very, very good there, Steve. Steve, I missed you. You have to come back soon, very soon. Yeah, I've enjoyed having you on. I just want to say that before we get to the end of the show.
Cheers. Thanks, Russ.
Okay. David, over to you. If you want to share a man of the match, feel free to. If you don't, please, you don't have to. But I do want a rating on Slavica. We've got about 4.5 minutes left. I'm curious thoughts on Slavica.
Yeah, well, I think for Scott Parker, he just did enough for me to be man of the match, but only just. I mean, there wasn't really much outstanding performances out there, but he was trying, you know.
Yep.
He still, you see him getting into tackles and everything and putting his body on the line more than anyone else, as far as I could see. So, Scott Park, but only just. Slavica, well, he's picked the right kind of team, but has he given them the right instructions? Has he given them the right half-time talk? I don't know. Substitutions, I think, were a bit uninspiring, really. As I say, if you lose Garbett, you might as well give up with the 3-5-2, really. So you might as well have brought on a strike or something at that point, perhaps. So I've got to mark him up for picking the right kind of team, but I've got to mark him down, I think, for perhaps lack of coaching, perhaps being out-coached. And, you know, the choices of bringing on the subs that he did, as I say, especially Woodrow, who was, you know, pretty unfit and, you know, out of practice. And as Mike said, he thought he saw him limping towards the end. So instead of Smith. So I'm going to give Slavica 6 out of 10.
Okay, very good there, David. Steve, over to you. We only have a couple minutes left, so kind of make it fairly quick.
That's
there,
okay.
My friend.
Yeah, I'm going for a 6 as well, straight with David. I don't think he's done anything particularly terrible up until the substitutions. And like when you're chasing a game, you need to bring someone like Matt Smith on and not just another midfielder like O'Hara. As much as I do like O'Hara, Matt Smith would have been a lot more useful. So, yeah, I'm going to go with 6.
Okay, very good. Do you have anyone that you want to call your man of the match?
Is that me?
Yeah,
Ryan Fredericks, because I think David was watching a different game to what I was.
I love
you
that.
Are aware, David, that I believe Fredericks is also wearing orange boots like Scott Parker. I could be wrong. So I think some of the tackles were from Fredericks rather than Scott Parker.
Okay.
I don't know.
Good guy.
Steve, you lost your train. You almost missed your train home, Steve, so I'm not sure if I believe you.
I had to pay 20p for the loo, David. I was rushing.
Okay. All right, guys, we only have 2 minutes left. I do want to mention this one last time because, first of all, this was a disgusting display by Fulham. I want to stress that. I'm furious with the performance. You guys have already shared that, so I want to mention that. And we were already talking about doing a relegation show. Fulham deserve a relegation show, so we're going to be doing one on Tuesday with Scott Tanfield from friendsoffulham.com. I look forward to it. Scott's all fired up to do it, and I look forward to doing it because we should be doing it. They are in a relegation battle, and it deserves a show. And even though I think they're going to stay up, I do, I still do, I think there is an opportunity to get relegated, so we have to have the discussion. David, we only have a little over a minute left. Anything else you want to share?
Yeah, when you have Scott Tanfield on, just turn your volume down and your headset a bit.
Okay. Steve, final thoughts?
I think we deserve it. The only thing I would say to all the fans is you notice how Bristol City turned out in numbers yesterday, even though they're down the bottom. Booing the players isn't going to help. You know, obviously give them a boo towards the end and let them know how you feel, but constant booing is just not going to help. It's going to make everyone even more nervous.
Okay, very good. Very good from both of you. You guys were fantastic today. I can't thank you enough for doing this show with me, but we are at the end. For David and Steve, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys. Have a great night.
Cheers, Russ. See you later, Dave.
Cheers. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Russ.